You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're into our number three of the Locked and Loaded show today on TNTRadio.live. If you're listening online, download the app from the App Store or the Google Store. If you miss any installments, any shows, you can check out Spotify, Apple Music, go on to TNT Radio, and we have every single session with every single guest for every single presenter on there and available for you to listen to at your leisure. Before I usher in my third and final guest of the day, I just want to look at some more items that are hitting the news in the UK. Doubts are raised over Oxford coronavirus vaccine, also known as the AstraZeneca jab, after all of the monkeys that took part in the trial are found to have contracted the disease. So we've been warning about this one for quite some time. When I started my Twitter journey just about 15 months ago, I was very, very vocal against the Oxford AstraZeneca jab. There was a lot of product recall on that one through various countries in Europe because of clotting issues. And now it's hitting the headlines that doubts have been raised over the Oxford coronavirus vaccine after all the monkeys have took part were found to have contracted the disease. Yeah, the efficacy isn't exactly great on that one. Moving on, a little bit of tongue-in-cheek humor here. A lady who authored a book called How to Murder Your Husband has been found guilty of, guess what, murdering her husband. So she wrote a book on it, and then she only went out and did it. I think that's probably a good publicity move. It kind of backfired on her. She's going to jail for a very long time, but I'm sure it will do her book sales no end of good, or maybe not, because obviously she didn't follow the instructions very well, because she's now banged up in jail for murdering her other half. So we need to watch out for that one too. In the UK, Chancellor Rishi Sunak will set out a cost of living plan in Parliament today. Then later this afternoon, he will be doing a live question and answer session where your views and opinions can be put to him. So Rishi, to this point, his solution to the spiralling cost of living is to reduce fuel duty by 5 pence a litre on petrol, which isn't really much good considering it's almost went up by 40% in the last 12 months alone. So it's not exactly what the people are crying out for. How that guy is still in a job, I will never know, but he's trying his best. Our Rishi is trying his best, but I feel it's not good enough, and I'm sure the people of the United Kingdom would agree with me on that one. Some things to watch for in the coming days, some things that are happening at this point in time. This is Locked and Loaded on TNT Radio. I'll be right back.
Mask mandates don't work.
No.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Let's do it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I'm very happy to be joined for the first time on Locked and Loaded. I think he's been on TNT Radio before with Hervoye Morich, who's a fellow Mexican resident. Both of these guys, Hervoye is originally from Croatia, I think. And this gentleman, Richard Nichols, who is an author currently living in Mexico, I do believe he's an Englishman. And I do fully intend to get to the bottom of why he's now currently living in Mexico. I don't know if he was kicked out of the country, if he just simply decided to move to somewhere sunnier. I don't know, but he's an author. He has wrote a book called Lost Causes that it was a long time in the works, this one. It was written over a 25-year period in anticipation of today's events. He also has a podcast called The Red Pilled Fiction Factory, available on YouTube. It looks like his location is Yucatan in Mexico, not somewhere I can say that I've ever been, but I'm sure it's a beautiful place. Mr. Richard Nichols, welcome to TNT Radio. How are you, sir? Are you well?
Very well, thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me on. It's a lovely morning here in Yucatan.
Wow. Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's actually, the sun's even shining here in Northern Ireland, which is not something that I can say happens very much. Are you well? Are you in good form? Or what's the state of play with you in life at this point in time?
Personally, very well, thank you. I came to Mexico about 18 years ago and have found my feet, fortunately enough. But I will say I am in despair at the way the world's heading, the direction the world's heading in, and that's always a thought on my mind these days. I can't seem to get away from it, no matter how far you travel.
Well, tell me this, Richard. You've wrote a book, this book of yours, Lost Causes, and in your own words here, it was written over a 25-year period in anticipation of today's events. So you kicked the writing of that off when, you know what, back in the 90s or what? Or when did you actually specifically begin to write that book?
July 1st, 1996, believe it or not. I was about 30 years old. I'd left university, gone into business and been reasonably successful. I had some cash in the bank, and then I suddenly found myself without a job. And I thought, well, what am I going to do with my life? This is as good an opportunity as any to make the decision. I was already sensing, I had a sense of foreboding about the way Britain in particular, but the Western world was heading. Somehow a sixth sense, I think, told me that something was going to go terribly wrong. And I thought, well, my first idea was to go into the political sphere. And I approached the Conservatives, who were supposed to be our guardians in that respect and on our side, just at a very local level, going to drinks parties and meeting the MP and stuff like that. But it was all, I found them a revolting group. I mean, I can't put it any other way. I had a visceral reaction to them, and I knew somehow that this wasn't going to be the way forwards. And so I thought I'd try something that no one else had been doing or looked at that point, which is to write a novel encapsulating the situation and maybe pointing a way out, a way forwards from it. It started out as a very basic thriller, really, with a few political hints here and there and nudges. But as I wrote it, and as I did the research into where we were and so on, it became much clearer to me that this was, not only was I right in my call that things were going to hell, but it was a very real and very active, deliberate plan in action that we were witnessing. And of course, that gripped me even more. So I incorporated more politics and philosophy into the book than I had originally planned. But yes, I started in 1996, took 10 years to write the original version. I was very lucky to get a top London publisher agree to it. He gave me an agent, put me in touch with an agent. All was fine and dandy. This was 2005. And then I was one of the very first people, I think, to be cancelled. Word came from on high that the book was not suitable, not politically correct. This is almost 20 years ago, I remember, and the deal was cancelled. So it then sat on my bookshelf for a while, the manuscript. Nothing much happened. I had to get on with my life because I'd now spent the cash in the bank and so on. So at that point, I decided to move to Mexico. I knew I couldn't fight the beast while in its belly, so I figured I might as well retreat to a safe distance, reestablish my life. And as it happened, I managed to get it published in 2017. London publisher, not so famous or anything. But then they cancelled it as well. I ended up self-publishing, and that's where I'm at today, trying to publicize it and get the message out.
Okay, well, I'm going to backtrack a little bit on that timeline, okay, because I want to find out a little bit more about this. It was done over a long period of time. It started and it stopped. It was cancelled. It was shelved. You lifted it. It was taken on by somebody else. It was cancelled again. Then you went down the self-publishing route. And in the interim period, you'd moved from the UK over to Mexico. Now, back to the 1st of July, 1996. Obviously, things were different back then than they are now, although you could argue that Britain has been in a slow, steady decline or reaching the end of the abyss, which is where I believe they're standing at right now. The country and the nation has just gone to pot completely. At that point, back in 96, let alone the events that are happening right now, what was happening in 96 that you saw that really started you to put pen to paper? What was the events of 96 that was really stirring your spirit up to address? What were the main points at that point?
There were lots and varied, and individually you could probably shrug them all off. But there's a famous Ian Fleming quote in one of his novels that once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, and three is enemy action. And I began to realize that these little stories all tied together. There wasn't a they were all a unified force that were being was being implemented against us, and they were as varied as the hunting ban. Mm-hmm. The Green Movement worried mm-hmm. me, but it wasn't until I actually saw these giant windmills spreading all over the beautiful landscape of Britain that mm-hmm. I realized these guys were in it for the kill. They weren't, it was no longer a sort of hypothetical, let's save the world, happy clappy thing. They were out to destroy our countryside, and they were doing it with our money and without really any positive benefit to us. I saw it in the dismantling of the British regiments that started then. I saw it in mass immigration without, you know, it was mass immigration to the death almost. Didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. And it was obviously having a negative effect. Uh-huh. And as I say, the big breakthrough, I suppose, is you realize it wasn't just the Greens here and the animal rights there and mm-hmm. so on. It was a single force that was somehow attacking us on every front. There was no relapse. Wherever you looked, whether it was the food we were eating or the mm-hmm. air we were breathing, it seemed that we were being mm-hmm. Under attack. And then, of course, Blair came in. This was all pre-Blair, really, a lot of yeah. this stuff. But once Blair came in, I knew that, you know, that's when the penny didn't so much drop as explode in my head. And and that's what gave me the momentum, if you like, to carry on. Yeah, and I don't, you know, the country has never looked back in a negative sense, and I've never looked back in a positive sense since that moment.
It's interesting, you know, two of the things in particular that you're bringing up, that's why I tried to rewind this back to think what was your thought process back in 96. And the two of the trigger points were, number one, the Green Movement, and number two, mass immigration. Obviously, since that has happened, that's what I mean. I believe the country's in serious decline at the moment, and those are two of the reasons behind that. Obviously, the Green Movement has continued to go, in their view, from strength to strength. Their increase or their influence is expanding. There's more and more people buying into the green agenda, and obviously the immigration situation in the United Kingdom and Ireland is just nuts at the moment, especially fueled by massive influxes of refugees coming in from Syria and from Afghanistan and now from Ukraine. They're pouring in left, right and centre. And just let me be clear about this. I don't have a problem with people coming, genuinely fleeing for their lives from war-torn areas that are destitute and need a home and need a resettlement, as long as the people receiving them have the capacity to house them and to provide for them without at the detriment of other people in that area that maybe equally are in need of assistance. So that's something that we're seeing has been exacerbated since you began to write that book in July 1986. Can you see, would you agree, I'm sure you would, that the green problem and the immigration problem has gotten a hell of a lot worse since then, and it doesn't look like it's showing any signs of abatement?
Oh, absolutely. It's got to the point where they really rule the roost. Any criticism of them is silenced. Any support for them is...
We've just lost sound there. Hopefully, we're going to reconnect back with Richard. We'll take a quick ad break, and we'll be right back in 2 minutes.
You should hear what Hervoy Morich is talking about.
This morning, I woke up to discover I've permanently been banned by a PayPal, as well as a number of other podcasters and writers, which is, you know, one of the principal ways I've been funding my Geopolitics of Empire podcast, the other thing that I work on. You know, it's clear for me that this direction has come from the U.S. government, likely the Pentagon, to Silicon Valley. You know, I don't think it's PayPal making the decision. It's the government. Right. This is a textbook example of fascism. So it's 2022, and I'm openly experiencing fascism.
Hrvoje Morić on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
I've got muscular dystrophy. That means my muscles are weak and it can be hard to breathe.
Now is a scary time for everyone, as we are at a higher risk for respiratory infections.
In good times and bad, the Muscular Dystrophy Association helps kids live with neuromuscular disease. The pandemic places more than 200,000 adults and children with muscular dystrophy at a greater risk.
Breathing is often hard when you live with a neuromuscular disease,
but the Muscular Dystrophy Association is here to help.
MDA is what ensures they receive critical medical care at one of over 150 care centers across the U.S.
During COVID-19, kids like me are at a greater risk.
The Muscular Dystrophy Association needs your support now more than ever.
COVID-19 won't stop us.
To learn how you can help, please visit helpmda.org. Thank you.
This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, we're back with Richard Nichols, author of Lost Causes and also host of the Red Pilled Fiction Factory on YouTube. He's based out of Yucatan in Mexico. And if you're on social media, which I'm sure most of you are, you can hook up with him at Writer, W-R-I-T-E-R underscore Nichols, N-I-C-H-O-L-S on Twitter. That's Writer underscore Nichols on Twitter. That's Mr. Richard Nichols. We're talking about this book that he has written over a long period of time, that initially was picked up by a publisher and dropped because of political correctness. Then it was shelved and lifted again, and somebody else dropped it. He was cancelled because of the content matter, and now it is self-published. So, of course, I'm trying to get to the bottom of why he keeps getting cancelled. And it's nothing sinister, by the way. It's simply talking about the Greens and about things like immigration, which, let's face it, if we're being honest here, are not exactly benefiting us on the whole in society. So talking about the trajectory of this, Richard, the Green movement is certainly picking up. There does seem to be massive amounts of immigration right across the globe. Countries seem to be throwing open their borders, especially actually from where you are. There's a lot of people piling into America from Mexico. What is the situation with regards to movement across that border? Is it not policed at all? Can't people just charge across as they feel? Could you do it yourself tomorrow if you decided to go to the U.S. and set yourself up in Texas? Could you do that, or what way does it work?
Yes, I could. A friend of mine actually here, a Canadian, has just made a film on it with Lauren Southern. And they spent 2 weeks with the migrant caravans. A couple of points. One is very few Mexicans are actually going into the States now. The situation in America isn't quite as good as it was before, and the people are deciding to actually return from the States. Mexicans are coming back to Mexico more than they're actually going to the States. Most people who are crossing the border now are coming from all parts of the world. It's a bit like the situation in the UK, places that America has no direct connection with. They're coming from Somalia, Haiti, wherever. Another thing that came out of this documentary, which is soon to be released, is that they're all funded. They're paid for by the UN and by NGOs. They have their own credit cards there.
Oh, yep. Well, you see that's the thing with immigration. The borders are open. Obviously, whenever Trump was in power, he famously said that he was going to build a wall that was going to separate Mexicans, or as he called them, bad hombres, from coming into the United States. But now, as you have just said, there are people actually that did cross the border from Mexico into the United States that have actually turned upon their heels and are making their way back down towards Mexico again. You know, you never know. You may actually be able to see people from California, some of these blue states that are under oppression from the like of Gavin Newsom. People might actually throw their heads up. And ironically, you could find that a wall that Trump had constructed was actually to keep Americans in America rather than keep Mexicans out. You could find there could be a mass exit from California down over the border into Mexico. Anything is possible these days. You know, and in terms of presidential decisions and things that are actually being done by the president of America, we've got to look carefully at what both Barack Obama and Joe Biden seem to be saying at the moment. I'm just having a look here. Some of the things that they've been coming out with seem to be very focused in and around George Floyd. He seems to be making an appearance all over again. Have you noticed Obama and Biden starting to talk to Floyd more about Floyd on the back of these mass shootings that are happening in America?
I'm sorry, yep. I missed a bit of that.
Yeah, no, what I was saying was you were mentioning how there were Mexicans had moved into America, but some of them are actually turning on their heels and coming back down over the border again. And it's conceivable, you know, with some of the blue states, the oppression that the blue states have been feeling, especially somewhere like California. Ironically, you could see people actually, instead of a wall that Trump had built keeping Mexicans out of America, it could be used to contain, if it was there, it could be used to contain people within California, for example, from fleeing the grips of someone like Gavin Newsom. And just the way that the presidents, we have Barack Obama and Biden, both over the space of the last 24 hours, talking about how the latest shooting in Texas was a tragedy, but they're both managing to wangle in George Floyd and the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. Is everything just simply being used as a political lever at the moment? Is nothing sacred anymore? They can't even leave something like a mass shooting alone without wangling George Floyd in there?
No, you're absolutely right. Every single aspect of our life, this is the important thing to understand. Every aspect is under attack, or is at least being modified and controlled and rescheduled to become a weapon against us. Weaponized, that a lot of people are using. Beto O'Rourke, the Texan politician, he went into the very news conference about the shooting and stood up and started making it all about him and guns and so on in front of the parents and, you know, the distraught families. But this is just one aspect. It is an all-encompassing attack. It's been and attacks like this, you have to understand, don't just happen overnight. They are coordinated, they're planned, they take decades to put into motion, decades or even longer, perhaps many decades. And we're now in a position where we are, to use military terms, we're encircled on all sides. We have little ammunition, we have no leadership, we're bedraggled, we're worn out, we're mentally exhausted. And the enemy seems to be poised to make the killer strike. Of course, that's not necessarily what's going to happen. I wrote the book Lost Causes with the name Lost Causes, because one thing about lost causes is they're never really lost until you give up on them. And it's my opinion that the enemy is a lot weaker than it seems. It has played all of its best cards, or used all of its best weapons, if you like. It has made terrific advantages, made terrific gains, and in many respects, we have to look at the situation through that lens. But a bit like in World War II, The Japanese and the Germans made outstanding gains for the first few years. They left us in this terrible sort of bedraggled situation, Dunkirk, Pearl Harbor. It took us a while, but gradually we pulled ourselves together. We got the leaders we needed, and we found a way to fight back. And sure enough, the enemy wasn't able to withstand the counterattack. And that's I hope very much that that's exactly the point we're at now, where the tables will be turned. I think we're seeing it already happen. The Cold War of this new war really came to an end with Ukraine. And contrary to everything that you read in the MSN, the Russians seem to have really knocked the Western global elites on their ass with their attack. All of the sanctions and all of the measures taken to fight the Russians surreptitiously and all the weapons sent has been for naught. In fact, it's backfired terribly. And I think this is an indication, and will be seen in the history books, as the moment when the cat was out of the bag. Of course, you could got to throw in COVID as well. But the West is now at least aware that there's something up. And that is 80-90% of the game. Until we are aware that we're under attack, we'll never be able to pose any resistance whatsoever. But we're now aware of it.
Yeah, it's interesting, I'm glad, because, you know, there's a lot of negativity out there. And I mean, I would be slightly less optimistic. However, I do still hold out hope, because if you don't have hope, listen, you've got nothing. The opposite of hope is despair. And the definition of despair is when you're in a bad situation and you just don't see any way out whatsoever. That is a state of despair. And ultimately, I think that's part of the globalist strategy, is to put people into the mindset where there is no way out, there is no getting out of this, there is no way forward. But I do also hold out some hope. Hope is the belief that despite everything looking bad on paper, or you look around you and things may look grim, there is always that chance that there will be a turnaround, and there's always that chance that there will be a restoration there. Of course, a lot of things maybe have to happen before that actually comes into play. However, like yourself, I would remain hopeful and maybe a little more cautiously optimistic. But, you know, if you don't have that optimism, Richard, I think your mind just shuts off and your head goes down, and then people slip into horribly depressive states, which is part of the psychological warfare that I think they're playing with us and have been really focused on that for the last 2 years.
Yes, I totally agree. I think I like your point. You have to hope. It's almost a moral duty in my mind. And on Twitter, and I advocate that anyone who's on social media or with their friends, they must take this attitude. To do otherwise is to just give up the fight. And once you give up the fight, you've got no chance. So we must go out there with a very positive message. There's as long as there's enough of us to mount a counterattack, which there are, we must have that mentality. And it's worth remembering that most revolutions and most counter-revolutions in history were orchestrated by very small groups relative to the population, but they were well motivated, they were well organized, and they were given, they had good leadership. And if we can just find those the keys to those things, I think there's a long way to go in this battle. It won't be easy. It will take decades to resolve ultimately, but very hopeful on that.
And when you think about, you referenced the business of what's going on in Ukraine. Just before you came on, I was speaking with two guys that I would be in communication with on a personal level also, and we're analysing what's coming out of Davos at the moment and what's coming out of Schwab's mouth and even George Soros's mouth. You know, he seems to be very pessimistic indeed. Soros would, and of course he would be, being a World Economic Forum associate, said Ukraine may be the beginning of World War III. And civilization may not survive it. So he's the yin to your yang, and, you know, the left to your right. He obviously is painting a very doom and gloom picture. But the reality is, Russia are actually in a better position now than they were before they went into Ukraine, despite the West's best efforts to sanction them and to nobble the value of the ruble and to collapse their economy, which Biden very much gloated about in the initial stages into March, and you know, towards the end of March, after the sanctions were levied on Russia, the ruble did tank. But now it's not only recovered all its losses, but it's actually in a stronger position than it's been in years. Russia aren't doing too badly out of this. Plus, they're winning. They're taking wherever they want to in Ukraine. And all these billions of dollars worth of aid and these billions of pounds worth of aid that are being thrown at Ukraine hand over fist into Zelensky's coffers, it doesn't seem to be any return on that investment.
No, I quite agree. I think you've hit on a good point. The opposition, for want of a better term, are very familiar and very expert at wielding something called soft power. Soft power is running committee meetings, it's getting your hands on the media, it's using think tanks and lobbyists and pollsters to reinforce your message and get it, convince people one way or the other that they're in the right and that they are the only option. But soft power is very limited in the real world. Once push comes to shove, once the gloves come off, soft, it doesn't matter how many newspapers you control, if the newspaper is destroyed somehow, or how many committee policy papers you've written or anything like that. The real world, it deals in much more basic tools, and they are things like the Russian missile systems, and they are things like resources, oil, energy, food, and so on. And that's what counts, and that's what the enemy or the opposition, let's call them, have yet to appreciate. And we have a lot of the aces when it comes to the more basic tools. We tend to be much more focused on actions and energy rather than words and fluff.
Yeah, there's a lot of fluff, and certainly there's a lot of words being spoken by the leaders in the West. You mentioned also food, and you mentioned energy. Those are two key components of Russia's, you know, economic structure. They're exporting a heck of a lot of energy into Europe, into the like of Finland, to the like of Germany, and obviously wheat. Ukraine and Russia combined are responsible for a very large portion of the world's wheat production into North Africa, into Europe, all over the world. You know, at the end of the day, when Biden decided to levy sanctions, NATO decided to levy sanctions, they were talking about blocking Russian bank accounts and seizing assets of oligarchs. And Biden simply said, okay, I tell you what, you pay me in rubles from now on or else I'll switch off your power. He's even talking about being paid in gold for some transactions. And yeah, he's ended up the better off for this. So in reality, you know, you mentioned fluff and talk. That seems to be all NATO really have done at the moment, has been talking the talk, but not walking the walk. Would you agree?
Yes, very much. I really think that they more or less have, in a matter of, 90 days, I believe, the Ukraine operation has been underway. In a matter of 90 days, the NATO has been revealed to be a paper tiger. Mm-hmm. The financial power, so-called financial power of the West, which was really one of their key weapons in their armory, without any doubt, their bluff has been called on that, and it's been shown to be another paper tiger. There's something that we have to get our head around is this is a seismic tectonic shift we're witnessing. It's something on a scale beyond nearly all of our comprehension. It's not just about Ukraine. It's not just about the Greens. It's not just about this or that. It's a massive civilizational shift. It started probably after the First World War, or just before or thereabouts, in my opinion. It certainly kicked into high gear after the Second World War. And for a long time, it looked like that was the way the world was going to be from here to eternity.
Yeah.
But They based it on strange precepts that no one had ever. Their foundations are very weak. They put
this sort of the earth as the cause to fight and die for. That's why we're supposed to be sacrificing our petrol bills for Ukraine. It's really to save the world and things like that. Whereas ultimately, man has always and always will, in my opinion, fight for much more basic things. Not these abstract animal rights and this and that. It's to do with blood. It's to do with land. It's to do with food, and it's to do with well-being. And they don't have much to offer in that sense. Really, all the stuff and think about it, they're offering us bugs, pods, no freedom of speech, no freedom of thought, no freedom of movement. These aren't things that people are rallying around. And their leaders, nor are their leaders the kind of people that people rally around. Look at Bill Gates.
No.
Look at,
hateful Soros people. They're hateful, hateful individuals, aren't they? You know, they're loathsome creatures.
They're loathsome. And people, people historically fight for their God, their country, and their fellow man. They do not. I can't see it lasting very long. The rallying cry, you know, fight for the bugs, fight for pods, fight for Bill Gates. And another thing, incidentally, a lot of these people are very old. Their day is gone. They missed the boat. I think that's why they're desperate now. It's one of the factors is they all realize they've only got a few years left. The average age of many of them are in the 80s and 90s. I mean, these guys, either it's victory soon or they're never going to see it. So, but people of that age are not, the nature and the world rallies towards the young and the fit and the healthy and the strong. And these guys are none of those things. So I think they've got a lot of weaknesses in their armor. Let's put it that way.
It's interesting you bring up the age thing. You know, that's something that I've thought about a lot, but nobody's really, you know, highlighted that before until I spoke to you today. I mean, you look at somebody like Schwab, who's well into his 80s. Even Bill Gates is pushing up towards 70. You know, Soros looks like he looks like a walking corpse. Even Prince Charles, you know, he's well on in years. None of these people really are spring chickens. And I think they're trying to live vicariously through this young leaders program that they have in the World Economic Forum. But the reality is they know their time is short and they know their cards, their clock card's going to get punched here pretty soon, if nothing else, just simply because of old age. Look at the like of the Rothschilds, you know, the people that are leading up the Rothschilds. They're ancient, and that's putting it mildly. So you do make a good point there. Actually, what we're going to do is we'll take one more break, and then when we finish, we come back from the break, we'll finish up this little session that we're doing today, just with maybe some views on the way things may pan out for the rest of 2022 going into 2023, both from your perspective living in Mexico and across the globe as a whole. So you're listening to Richard Nichols, author based in Mexico, and me, Rick Munn, in Northern Ireland. This is TNT Radio Live. We'll be back real soon.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Former President Donald Trump will be very pleased to hear that his endorsed representative, Marjorie Taylor Greene, won with a massive 70% of the vote in Georgia's House Republican District 14 primary. She was challenged by five other GOP candidates, of which her nearest competitor, Jennifer Strawn, received only 17% of the vote. Marjorie Taylor Greene ran a strong conservative campaign and called to impeach Joe Biden, fire Fauci, ban the vaccine and mask mandate, and expose the stolen 2020 presidential election. While she fought against the military-industrial complex and voted against the latest $40 billion military and aid package for Ukraine, her opponent Strawn claimed she served as a megaphone for Putin and that, quote, "Americans know that Russia is the aggressor and the sole cause of this crisis," unquote. I would say the voters in this district knew better. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Are you finding it harder to do the things you used to do? Like vacuuming or getting to appointments. If you need a bit of support at home, the Australian Government's My Aged Care is your starting point to access services. You'll find all the information and advice you need in the one place. To find out about other services, eligibility and costs, call 1800 200 422 or go to myagedcare.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra, spoken by Heather Christie.
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. The majority of victims know their attacker. It could be your friend, your neighbor, or someone you met at a party. If you said no, it's rape, and it's a crime. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Call the National Sexual Assault Hotline today at 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
News more twisted than soap operas and with worse actors. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, we're running up to the end of Locked and Loaded today, Thursday, 26th of May, 2022. And I'm very happy to be joined for the first time on Locked and Loaded anyway by Richard Nichols, based out of Mexico. We're covering a lot of ground at the moment. We started off back in 1996 with the beginnings of a novel that Richard has written called Lost Causes. It's self-published. You can check that out. Actually, I'll try and give you a link through before we finish the show off proper here. You can get it at tinyurl.com/. In fact, let me say this. If you go to his Twitter feed at writer_Nichols, there's a link through where you can actually purchase a copy of his book, Lost Causes. It really was triggered by the green agenda, immigration, various things that were happening in the UK. These things have multiplied and intensified over time. We're talking about the World Economic Forum. We're talking about the old dinosaurs that are trying to get their pound of flesh out of mankind before they pop their clogs and move off this mortal coil. Is there an element, Richard, do you think, where they could realize that if the game is up and they're not going to get what they want, they're going to go scorched earth on us, and they're going to just try and trigger a nuclear war, they maybe try and trigger complete global collapse of the economy on their way out through the door? Is that a possibility?
I think that's an absolute possibility. I think, and this is something I address very much in the book, the mentality of these people is not one of positive and of goodness and growth and well-being and happiness. The mentality of these people, the reason they're in these positions and why they're shutting us down and attacking us on every front, is quite simply that they are destructive people. They have no positive or beneficial insights into how the world should be, just how they want it to be, and they want to bring it down. So they are already facing that reality. The big clue was Henry Kissinger coming out just a few days ago, and at Davos, no less, saying that the war in Russia, against Russia, really, they had to accept the reality that it had all gone horribly wrong for them, and that the best thing now was to back off quickly. That's a dramatic sea change, and I think is auspicious of what's to come, indicative of what's to come. And so, yes, these guys, they don't have the power to build and to generate greatness or beauty, but they do have a lot of power when it comes to destroying that beauty and that greatness. And they will not take this lightly. They will turn up. You know, scorched earth is exactly the sense that I see it. The Samson option, as it's called sometimes, bring the whole building down, even if it brings them down with it. And I fear that's what's coming next. And I do think they'll get away with it to a large extent. Let's face it, they already have. They've done the damage they've done so far is absolutely immense, and a lot of it will be permanent. But there's still a long way to go, and I do think we have to brace ourselves for that. On the plus side, a lot of, going back to their weaknesses and why I hold out a torch of hope, is that all of this power and authority that they have, it doesn't reside in them themselves. They are a very small number of people, and they tend to be these sort of octogenarians and stuff who individually and personally, they don't have any strength really or any great weight or gravity on, other than what's bought and paid for and the PR and the press that they can get. They need, for their strategies to work, they need people like us. They need soldiers, they need policemen, they need the man in the street. And gradually, slowly but surely, the man in the street is seeing the light and is backing away from them, having accepted and swallowed lock, stock, hook, line and sinker, the whole thing that the opposition were promoting. They're beginning to back off, and no surprise there. You suddenly, you may have been a sympathizer with the Green Movement when it was all talking about unicorns and windmills and stuff. But the day you can't turn on your lights because there's no electricity, because it's all the windmills are down, or the day that your children start to starve because the infrastructure can't support the population, the demands of the population, is a day when you see the light, really. And there aren't many people going the other way. There aren't many people from our side going over to their side. I dare say there's hardly any at all. But there's a hell of a lot of people coming our way. And that, it's like a seesaw. Suddenly, all the weight's on one side, but it doesn't take too much for the weight to fall on the other side. And then the whole thing tips. And this is where time is on our side, in a sense. Mm-hmm. I don't say it's going to be easy, and I don't say it's going to be pleasant, and I dare say it's going to be pretty goddamn awful. But we are at the beginning of a sea change, and I hope to live to see it through with all of you guys.
Yeah, I think you know, fatigue is also a big player in this, because people are just hacked off right now. I mean, I'm seeing in my own, you know, people that I associate with and various people, I can see the toll of the last 2 years really beginning to take its effect on them now, or should I say take its toll on them now, because, you know, there's been just solid, constant pressure on people, on their minds, on their bodies, on their finances, on their work environments, on their, you know, social circles, constant for the last 2 years, and people are just ground down and they're worn down, and I think they're reaching the end of their tether. And even we're seeing this, if you've been following what's happening in Sri Lanka, they have just said, you know what, yeah, enough is enough. They're burning the politicians' houses to the ground. One of the politicians has been killed. The PM about 2 weeks ago was displaced because of public unrest. I think his brother is actually the president of Sri Lanka. He's not exactly making himself known to his loyal subjects at the moment. He's in hiding. The army are on the streets with a shoot to kill policy. People are looting to get food. There's no medicines going into that place, and they're screaming for a bailout because if they don't, they've got no fuel, and the place is literally going to go up in flames. And I think once, there's an old saying that a hungry man is an angry man. When it gets to that point, when your family's hungry, or your family's hungry, and you've got no food in the fridge, and your electric's off, and you've got no job to go to, there's only one place you're going to end up, Richard, whether you like it or not. That's on the street with probably a brick in one hand and a Molotov cocktail in the other. Yeah. Not by choice, but what else can you do?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. There's an irony to this. The left, the opposition, have always had this phrase: "The worse, the better." You know, they want things. Uh-huh. They want crises after crises, so they can exploit it and turn us into timid little mice and uh-huh. act as saviors, which they never were. Uh-huh. But ironically, the worse, the better is now something that favors our side. People have been. We have to accept one of our great weaknesses is that we've been mollycoddled and looked after and fed and sheltered and given health care and everything seemingly by out of thin air for maybe 50 years. And we have become soft, and we have taken it for granted that these things, the electricity, the food, everything, the peace and quiet that we have enjoyed will always be permanent. Mm-hmm. But that's all over. That's gone. It will be now a there'll be social unrest of one sort or another ongoing for decades perhaps. But as it gets mm-hmm. worse, people do reach the end of their tether. They do go Sri Lankan on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. A hungry man, certainly when you've got, there's a Gerald Salente, the commentator, American financial commentator, keeps saying when people have nothing, they have nothing to lose. And we're reaching that point. So again, I think this is a factor that the opposition will have a hard time counteracting. It's very difficult to bullshit.
No, that's fine. That's understandable.
He's happy when he's starving. His children are crying. The roof over their head has gone, and you know, the world's suddenly a very different place. And he finds his old instincts rise.
Yeah, the old survival instinct, you know, at the end of the day, there's nothing more innate in a human. And a lot of people have never actually experienced this. That's the problem. They've never experienced that level of distress whereby their children are literally starving. They're losing the roof over their head. They have no options at all because we live in a pretty sheltered society. I know there's poverty and I know there's people are really struggling at the moment, but there is still roofs over heads. And it's unusual to see someone actually starving to death in the West versus somewhere like sub-Saharan Africa. If you look at the great famines in Ethiopia or in Somalia or what's going on in Yemen at the moment, we haven't reached that level yet or the Sri Lanka level yet. But to coin your phrase, you know, it could only be a matter of time before we go Sri Lankan, quote unquote, if our food shortages manifest, if the diesel is not there to drive, you know, our vehicles that are delivering food and there's no electricity to manufacture or to run our appliances, it's going to be a different story altogether. And I fear, you know, you mentioned, you actually used a good example there, the Samson effect, you know, with these politicians, or not even politicians, it's these globalists that are influencing the politicians to act in the ways that they are. You know, they take on the scorched earth mentality. And if you're familiar with the story of Samson in the Bible, you know, he was very antagonistic towards the Philistines. And it talks about his life where he killed very, very many Philistines. But in his death, when he actually brought the temple of Dagon down upon his own head, it said he killed more people in his death than he ever did in his life. So his death count at his point of death was higher and the damage he inflicted was higher than he did during his lifetime. Yeah. And that's my only concern. And, you know, when you mentioned that, that's the first thing that came into my head. These dogs like Gates and Soros and Kissinger and all these other warmongers, if they go out, or as even Hillary Clinton has said, because the knives are out for Hillary, the Wall Street Journal's publishing things about her and Russia and Trump, she said, well, if I go down, if I get knocked off my perch, I will bring at least half of Washington down with me. It's their almost suicide bomber mentality to say, well, if I'm going to go up in a bang, I'm going to try and take out as many people with me as possible. And that's an equally disgusting mindset as well. If we could only get rid of them before it gets to that point, Richard would be in a good position, I think.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the conclusion I came to in the book. I could have lifted those words you just said and lifted them from my book and put them in your mouth. It's okay. Very much their mentality is that the people who are dysfunctional, they don't work in the modern world. They don't like freedom. It's not so much they don't like freedom, but they don't like consequences of freedom. They fear it terribly. They fear exposure of their weaknesses. They fear which freedom brings. They fear being failures. And so their whole life's goal is to destroy the system that allows them to be fragile and weak, that reveals them for what they are. They much prefer the system before, where there were masters and slaves and servants and feudal bosses. And that's what they're trying to bring about. And they will not stop. They have no other option in their world view. It is that or bust. So I'm afraid they're dedicated. They are the suicide bomber. They don't mind losing their own life in the fight. And we have to take that into account because in what's coming, that's going to be a very real dimension to what we see now that they're fighting for their lives.
Wouldn't it be nice, though? Wouldn't it be nice? Let's just dream about this for a second before we wrap up the show. Wouldn't it be nice to see them taken out of, let me say, not taken out, but in case that's misconstrued, taken out of the position that they're in of influence where they can orchestrate these campaigns of terror and depopulation through elected representatives that are obviously on the payroll and on the books via the World Economic Forum or via the World Health Organization. We can't say the way this will pan out for sure. We're giving our opinions on it, but wouldn't it be nice to see them just blow away and dry up and blow away like an autumn leaf overnight?
But it's we not going to happen, hope. Unfortunately.
No, we can't, but hope. I'm trying to take a little bit of your optimism. I think actually your optimism is rubbed off on me and my pessimism is rubbing off on you. It's almost like we're reverting positions here towards the end of this segment that we have. But we've got to wrap it up. I just want to say, I really do appreciate, I know it's early in the morning where you are in Mexico right now. It's 1 p.m. in UK at the moment. It's evening time in Australia. Richard Nichols, I really appreciate you coming on and speaking so openly and frankly. If you're listening in, you can catch up with Richard at writer_Nichols, N-I-C-H-O-L-S on Twitter. He has a book out. If you check out his Twitter page, you'll find a link through to his book, which is called Lost Causes. That is currently self-published, written over a period of time. And also, he is the host of the Red Pilled Fiction Factory on YouTube. Richard, I hope it's not the last time we talk. It would be nice to get you on periodically, just even for an update on what's going on in Mexico, America side of things, to keep us up to date with what you think is developing in the world. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Hopefully it hasn't been too traumatic for you either. That was Mr. Richard Nichols. I really appreciate it. That was Richard Nichols, and I'm Richard Munn from Northern Ireland, and you've been listening to Locked and Loaded on TNT Radio Live. I will be back again, all being well, tomorrow morning my time. Enjoy the rest of the day, whoever you are or wherever you're listening from. Hope it's a wonderful one, as wonderful as you are, listeners. I'll be back real soon.